Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, a how-to manual for all those wanting permanent change in their lives. It is also a guide to virtually go back in time and eliminate all negative feelings associated with your past experiences that have caused any level of difficulty in your present life. Nazim has helped clients move from apathy to productivity, from codependency to loving themselves without attachment, from drug-addicted lifestyles to clean and sober positive examples, demonstrating what can be accomplished when one connects and stays connected to that which gives life. I am Dorothy Rossi, the co-host. Without any further ado, I give to you, Nazim Rashid. Honey?
Am I there? Am
now
I there now?
Are.
Oh, there yes, we are. Okay. Okay. It's a matter of pushing the right buttons on my end, it looks like. Well, okay. It is another day in paradise. Another day in paradise. Another day to feel good. You know, another opportunity to find reasons to feel good. Yes. We're based in a Phoenix, Arizona area in the good old USA. I always like to give a shout-out to my out-of-the-country friends in Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, South Africa, Nigeria, Malawi, Austria, Australia, Canada, United Kingdom, Germany, and Singapore so far. All right. And if I missed any of you guys and gals, just email me and let me know where you're listening from, and I'll add you to the list of our international community. Fantastic. So, welcome all into our Paradise One studio where every day is a holiday and a party never stops. Yay! All right. Let's see here. Well, I think my studio audience was a little waning that time, but that's okay. All right, that's okay. So we're moving on. Welcome again to the Reconnected Show, which is based directly or indirectly on my book, Reconnected. Now, as you regulars know, we always have a blessing for the show and take time to receive. So I always tell you my disclaimer, like I always mentioned before in this program, whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves. And in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I'm using God as an universal theme and is not relegated to a particular religion or belief system. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. So with the name of God, we thank you. Possibilities and probabilities of a productive, prosperous, positive day. Thank you for creating this moment in time as we reflect your attributes to to the best of our ability. Thank you for choosing this time for us as we share your blessings with others. Thank you for a clear and focused mind ready to receive more energy and grace from you. Amen. All right, now for our show notes, we have Dorothy. Take it away. Yay!
We all have experienced disappointments in our past, and some of us have not reconciled those issues. In order for us to travel wonderfully on our healthy path of life, we have to release all unnecessary baggage that is preventing us from going full speed ahead. This is what Nazim's book Reconnected and this program is designed to do. Let us hear from you as we learn together how discovering the needs of our child self can make a substantial difference in our lives. Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, is available at www.cloudsofabundance.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, Healthy Habits Health Food Store, my favorite health food store in Phoenix, Arizona, that's Healthy Habits Health Food Store, also Jazzy Yogurt Shop in Scottsdale, Arizona. The chapters in the book and the themes of this show are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addiction, recovery issues, identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address, that's nrbookclub@gmail.com. And it's in Nazim, R as in Rashid, books@gmail.com. Or his website, www.cloudsofabundance.com. You'll find information such as life coaching, book signing dates, webinars, and workshops. All life coaching is done through your phone, so you can have sessions with Nazim wherever you may be in the world. Life coaching is about removing the obstacles and encouraging you to go beyond your perceived barriers to the accomplishment of your dreams and aspirations. Life coaching is about results now and creating the future that you want versus counseling that spends a lot of time in healing the past. Healing the past is also important and something Nazim does with his book and book-related events. It's time to be reconnected and time for the new you.
Nazim? Mm-hmm. Yes, it is time for the new you. Absolutely. We've tuned into the right channel today for this information. Absolutely. Well, this is a personal growth program. I'm sure you probably figured that out by now. Designed with your inner peace in mind. It's very important to understand that the Reconnected Show is all about that right there. You know, we have a no tolerance philosophy for negativity. You know, all about your inner peace, focusing on what you like to have, what you desire, not what you don't want to have. Too many times we focus on what we don't want and wonder why we keep getting those things. You see? Yeah, for sure. You know, like the idea of, you know, like someone wanted to talk about fighting depression. Well, you got two major negative vibrations right there, fighting and depression. So why would you want to fight anything, and why do you want to affirm depression? So we don't do that on this show. The discussions here will be based directly or indirectly on the chapters in my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for filling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. You'll learn to become a time traveler. A time traveler, yes, yes, yes. And this was so different about my book here is when you look at other books in the category of inner child therapy, which my book falls into, they're great books. I've read some of them. And the idea that when I mentioned the child self, I'm talking about that little self you once were, that flesh and blood person you once were. You know, imagine looking into those little eyes, you know, and what your hair looked like and your little hands and all that. You know, that's the child self. That's what I'm talking about, for sure. And none of the other books addresses this at all. That's the most unique thing about you, we connected. I'm talking about looking at how we can actually turn things around using what I call virtual experience to alter the feelings that we had back in those days. Yeah. I will have you traveling back to the time and place of your upbringing, becoming a senior advisor, next door, friend of the family, and mentor to your child self. You will create a fictional character, the mentor, you. Yeah, you're producing a play, you know. The play is called Your Life. Yeah. Yeah, you're acting as the mentor to your child self. Imagine having sessions with that self you once were, as you will address those negative events that you still carry with you and change the outcome to one of your desire. This way you will create real internal change in your life and be free of the negative events or negative effects of unresolved past issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me repeat that last one. You will create inner change in your life and be free of the negative effects of unresolved past issues. And that's the problem a lot of people are having today. It affects the marriages, it affects the jobs, it affects them at home, it affects addictions. Okay? Yeah. Unresolved past issues. Yeah. Now, there are other benefits Reconnected has, like for parents who want new information for raising the best emotionally balanced children possible. Oh, yes, real good parents manual. Absolutely. In that regard, I have a 3-part parenting video on YouTube based on my book. Just go to youtube.com and put in the search Reconnected, the parents manual. Again, Reconnected, the parents manual. More benefits is also for mentors. You know, those are mentoring programs. Absolutely. Yeah, you're gonna have additional tools, communication, listening skills, and addiction, codependency, and all those very important tools for the mentors to have so they can properly, you know, mentor and guide the young ones who are following them. And teachers who would share more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. Yeah. More benefits, like couples, for instance. Yeah. Couples can really benefit from the personal growth tools being offered, such as communication and listening skills. Yeah. Another major benefit, drug recovery, or just I'll say recovery. I have over 100 pages dedicated to addictions, codependency, and recovery in my 12 Principles of Recovery chapter and codependency chapter. The recovery program is not just for those afflicted with drug addictions. That's why I didn't say drug recovery, just recovery. It is also beneficial to those suffering from anger, abuse, compulsive disorders, overeating, gambling, sexual and controlling issues. Reconnected is also for any individual who wants to consciously connect to their higher self, to spirit, source energy, to God. You see, it's really a multi-purpose manual. 6 manuals in one. Parents manual, teachers manual, recovery manual, mentors manual, relationship manual, a human manual for the transformation of your negative experiences to positive memories, loving yourself at deep levels, and creating the life you have always desired. Yes, isn't that wonderful? Loving yourself at deep levels and creating the life you have always desired. Here's my statement to you. I'm committed to sharing practical tools with and supporting those who want and envision for themselves an abundant life, an empowered life, an independent thinking life, a spiritual life, a reconnected life. All right. All right, now for a happy news segment, which you always do something happy. At our international and national news desk, we have Dorothy again. Take it away.
The title of today's article, which is written by Sarah Griffith, and that was July 30th, 2013. The title is Be Happy. Your genes will thank you for it. Doing good leads to strong immune cells. American scientists said individuals who derive their happiness from a sense of those favorable gene expression profiles in their immune cells. UCLA research found people with high levels of the type of happiness that comes from consuming goods showed weak antiviral genes. Doing good and feeling good have different, very different effects on the human genome, even though they generate similar levels of positive emotions. American scientists have found different types of happiness have surprisingly contrary effects on our genes. UCLA research found that people who derive their happiness from helping others have strong antibody genes, while people who get kicked from self-gratification can suffer from low antiviral and antibody gene expression. Study, which also involved the University of North Carolina, is the first of its kind to examine how positive psychology impacts human gene expression. People who are do-gooders have high levels of eudaimonic supernatural well-being. They derive their happiness from a deep sense of purpose and meaning in life, those favorable gene expression profiles in their immune cells. Those studies from this happiness group had low levels of inflammatory gene expression and strong antibody and antiviral genes. However, individuals who have high levels of hedonic or predisposed to pleasure well-being, the type of happiness that comes from consuming goods and self-gratification, show the opposite. This group of people showed high inflammation and weak antiviral and antibody genes. The study findings were published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The research led by Stephen Cole, a UCLA professor of medicine, and Barbara L. Fredrickson of the University of North Carolina has taken a decade. The scientists have looked at how the human genome responds to fear, stress, misery, and other negative mental states, but focused on how human genes might respond to positive psychology in this study. They studied the biological implications of hedonic and eudaimonic well-being through some 21,000 genes. Previous research found immune cells show a shift in baseline gene expression profile during times of uncertainty, stress, and fear. The shift is characterized by an increased expression of genes involved in inflammation and less of those involved in antiviral and antibody function. Professor Cole believes the response probably evolved to help human immune systems cope with the changing nature of microbial threat associated with changing social and environmental conditions at the time. The threats included bacterial infection from wounds produced by fighting, an increased risk of viral infections as people live closer together and become more sociable. In the present study, the researchers drew blood samples from 80 healthy adults who were assessed with hedonic and eudaimonic well-being, as well as negative psychological and behavioral factors. The study found people with eudaimonic well-being showed favorable gene expression profiles in their immune cells, and those with hedonic well-being showed an adverse gene expression profile. And that's the end of the article.
Well, okay, all right, that's why when we actually found the article, I broke down the two terms there so we all understood what's going on. I didn't understand the. I think it's called eudaimonic. Was that the term there?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mispronounced here.
Yeah, eudaimonic and versus the other term was what now?
Hedonic. H-E-D-O-N-I-C.
Oh. Oh yeah, yeah, like hedonism. Yeah. And it's very important to understand is that eudaimonic is referring to a supernatural, like a really exaggerated kind of thing there. And but the whole idea of the article is this relating how when you're feeling good and happy, that affects us physically. Your immune system is stronger. Yeah. And also, you got your thymus gland that does a lot of that too. So that's another reason to be happy. Another reason to be okay. And we're going to talk about the bliss point today. So that's an excellent way, a transition right into our topic today, you know? Yeah. There are benefits, health benefits. Yeah, for sure. You know, just think about that. If doctors would use more of this message with their patients, then they'll have a better, you know, I won't say they have less patients. The idea that they'll have happier patients, they'll go out and refer more people to them because they know that they'll feel good with that particular doctor. Emphasizing the good, happy, smiling. You know, some doctors don't even smile. Anyway, very good. Very good article. All right. So it goes right into our theme. And it's the bliss point. Bliss, B-L-I-S-S, bliss point. See, all this goes right together. You know, connecting to the bliss point raises your T-cell count. Aha, that's right. Okay, so we want to welcome our returning special guest speaker, clinical psychologist and author, Dr. E. Douglas Brown, as he continues on this theme of the bliss point, with this being the third installment. His synopsis is as follows. We live in an inner United States of thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. Throughout life, a person simultaneously moves from one perception to another perception, one thought to another thought, and from one feeling to another feeling. Each person is a traveler who journeys first from a condition of knowing nothing, then a condition of infantile self-obsession, then to a condition of being possessed by anyone or anything that the person thinks can induce pleasure and relieve discomfort. That by itself is pretty major to understand that. Yeah. Some of us eventually make it to a state of freedom from bondage to fleeting urges. Yeah, from bondage to fleeting urges, affiliations, and ego attachments. That state of freedom is commonly referred to as higher consciousness, a.k.a. the bliss point. At their best, parents can only motivate, inspire, and teach their children to strive for a higher consciousness, also known as the bliss point. At their worst, parents may dampen, discourage, and ill-equip their children to seek and strive for the bliss point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the opinions and guesswork aside, it is what I want as I near the end of my journey, not what someone else wants for me. It is what I hope to become as I near the end of my journey, not what someone else wants me to become. Amidst all that surrounds me, I must first realize that I am disconnected from my true self, then not be satisfied with just knowing that I am disconnected. If I'm serious, I must do what has to be done to be reconnected to the bliss point. Okay? Ooh. All right. All right. So, Dr. Brown, you are now with
us.
Yes,
sir. Yes, sir. Mm. Yes, sir. And listening to you read that introduction, I said, I hope Nazim helps me break this down into pieces and ask questions as we go along in terms of what we're dealing with.
Oh, yeah. That's why I tried to take my time and speak a little slower so that people will get this idea of bliss point.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. So help us out here. You know, it's a tall task to take on, and it's because it should be a tiny bit easier because you've already addressed this a couple of times already on some level or another. So it's not a brand new concept to us right now. We've heard the bliss point now, so that makes it a little easier for today.
Yes, it does. I'd like to start with the first sentence. I'd like to start, we live in an inner United States of thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. All the time when we are awake, at every given moment, we are moving from one perception to another one. We're moving basically from one level of awareness, from one awareness to another awareness. Perception, see, is my recognition, my ability to interpret the sensory information that I'm getting about the outside world. Let's just call it being aware, period. I'm going from one awareness to another awareness. And with this awareness, there's thought. I'm thinking about what I'm aware of. And there are also feelings accompanying what the content of my awareness is.
Mm-hmm.
So at any given time, it's like, and I use it because there's states of, you want to call it a province, all of this is taking place at the same time. And all of it is organized and all of it is united. This is a very, very beautiful, synchronized process taking place here in our brains. We're getting sensory information from our senses, our hearing, our sight, our hearing, our touch, all of it. We're getting all of this information about the outside world. And at the same time, we are aware of it. We're instantly almost aware of this information. And see, this is the foundation right there. Let me stop a moment. Just stop there, and we have the foundation for all of our learning, all knowing that takes place, all of the understanding that follows. All of this flows from that very basic foundation of awareness. Simply means, and what is going on? What is my reality at any given moment? And, of course, there are feelings that accompany what I am perceiving, what I'm knowing, what I'm aware of each moment in my life. And in a way, we can more or less capsulize psychologically that inner life we have inside our state, inside ourselves, that inner state of awareness we have. We're like the traveler. We're like a traveler and we're journeying. And in the initial phases of this journey, we don't know anything. We don't know anything about the world we're in, we're born in, we're living in now. We don't know anything. So the instant that we emerge from our mother's wombs, we begin to know, or we begin to process this information. We're not even self-conscious yet. There is no me yet. There's not an I yet.
Wow.
I'm immediately, the brain and nervous system is immediately beginning to process all of this stimuli from the environment.
Wow.
And so we're moving from a blank slate to what? Within months and a couple of years, we reach another level of awareness, which could be described more or less as infantile self-obsession. That is, I become fascinated with what I am. I don't know what I am, but I'm beginning to become very curious and very fascinated with whatever this is that I am. And we see this, we see it all the time when we see infants and toddlers.
Okay.
They're touching their hands, they pick up something and they look at it. They're very focused and they're looking at it. They're feeling it in their hand. Or they may rub the floor, rub something, and they keep rubbing it repetitively because, what, this is new. Wow, this is fantastic. I wonder what this is. So there's this constant state, what, the constant learning, the constant surprises that go along with becoming aware of this world that I'm in now. And I also I'm also developing in the course of this an infant sense of self. This infant self, which is basically, I'm preoccupied with the self. The self basically is my body, what I'm experiencing physically. And you know, by the time, maybe two and a half years, everything evolves and revolves around me. It's my way or no way. I want my milk now. I want the toy now. If you don't give me what I want, I'm going to start screaming. Or I have other options I can use. What I'll do is whatever I think is going to move you and get you to do what I want you to do. See, I don't realize, I haven't reached the point yet where I'm aware. Let's go back to that word, where I'm aware that there's a much greater world around me. There are other people around me, in the sense that it's not just the people who take care of me. It's not just people that I see in the house or the room all the time. That's yet to come. That's yet to unfold. And as I am rapidly growing and maturing, my brain develops what are called mirror neurons. And the phrase mirror neurons is an apt phrase to use because it's, in a way, it's like looking in a mirror. Because as my nervous system is developing and my brain, I'm also developing neurons that are associated with my awareness that I'm in a larger group, my awareness of others. Awareness of others, not as objects, but as people.
Now, what age did that happen, by the way? At what point?
About 3 years old, two and a half to three. It begins to emerge there, right? Because we're moving into, very slowly, we're moving into a stage where that awareness, my awareness now includes an awareness that I'm part of a greater social community. You see, before, everything has to evolve around me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, this time, I'm becoming aware of this as a social community, a human community. I began to recognize that others look like me and are very similar to me. I began to sense or perceive or interpret their feelings. In other words, the word we have for that is empathy. It means, do you know what it's like to be in another person's shoes? Can you begin to identify with what they are feeling and what they are saying? I'm moving away from strictly self-obsession, and I'm becoming a social being. A social creature.
Okay.
Now, we're there, right? We've gone from not knowing, the totally absence of any really conscious awareness,
right,
to this little human being that's now a social being. At this time, when I'm that social being, I'm primarily focused on individuals around me who can make me feel good. They produce, or let's say they are responsible, or indirectly they induce pleasure. And when they relieve any pain I feel, any discomfort. The discomfort may be physical. It may be emotionally. When I start crying, they come around and they soothe me and they talk to me. So I'm beginning to identify and focus on people who are around there who care for me. The notion of caring in the sense there are specific people around me who are seemingly in the right place at the right time whenever I need something and I'm afraid or I'm not comfortable, and I really need some relief. Are you? Are we there? Are we there so far?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now, if this relationship continues without any growth, without any real inner growth, I become what I call possessed. Possessed as in, you know, my total awareness, my mindset is in a way controlled by individuals who in fact have the ability more or less to tell me things or do things that make me feel good, that relieve discomfort. As I mature, I'm older, I grow older through adolescence, young adulthood, and what have you. You see, I begin to attach myself to individuals, to organizations, to beliefs, to whatever makes me feel comfortable, whatever makes me enlarges my sense of self. But you see, here we have something that's very interesting that's taking place here. When I began to focus and identify with these individuals, whatever you name it, whatever it is in the environment that brings about this comfort, more than likely that's not really my true self. That's my ego.
Okay.
That ego that I think that's who I am. And so in order to soothe the ego, to satisfy the ego, what is it that I'm always doing? I'm always trying to connect. I use that word specifically. I'm always trying to connect with people, things, and ideas that massage my ego, that make me feel that I'm somebody.
All right.
And this is where my attachments come in. This is where my affiliations, the ego attachments. This is where, you know, when I'm hungry, I've got to have that double-decker now. Nothing less, no more. And I'm not saying
right.
anything wrong. I'm trying to give an idea.
Well.
That, you know, the urges like hunger, sex, you name it, these urges, these physical urges, all of these are on their own level at this point. It's commonly about my ego. My ego and self-satisfaction, an ego satisfaction. It's about identification. And there is a, so to speak, dark side to this as well. And this is what I want to introduce at this point. Should I not be able, my ego, should I not be able to feel sufficient confidence, if I don't really feel confident in myself, if I don't feel adequate, if I don't really feel I'm much of anything, then there's a greater likelihood that under certain kinds of situations, I will develop what is called an inferiority complex. An inferiority complex, an ego inferiority complex.
Mm-hmm.
And many times to compensate, you know, in order to make up for this ego inferiority complex, I will begin to act superior to others, to belittle. I may blame others. I may act superior to them. I may develop this habit of putting other people down or putting their ideas down. And that's the superiority complex.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, my awareness is essentially an awareness of going from one complex to the other one. Now, let me simply put it in very simple terms.
Okay.
My awareness goes from inferiority complex to superiority complex. I go from one state to the other. So this isn't something where, you know, it's a delayed action. I just simply these emotions, thoughts, and feelings vacillate so fast they move. I'm constantly driven to reduce any sense of inferiority or inadequacy.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you, what age does that typically happen?
That can begin to happen around as early as 9, 10 years old.
Okay.
You see, it can happen that the rudiments of these feelings, the inferiority complex, occur. The seeds of it can be implanted when I am very young. And,
okay. And
major influences that can implant either seeds for me having the workings of a healthy self-concept are my parents or my guardian. What they say to me, what they do, what we do or not do, what they say, their feelings about me. You know, in other words, I am a part of their world. We live in a mutual world. And in part, depending on their thoughts and their feelings and how they treat me or mistreat me, at a very early age, I can begin to develop these complexes, the sense of inadequacy, of weakness. And you were talking early in the introduction of the show, we were talking about an individual learning how to overcome their negative past.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, you said, quote, negative effects of unresolved past issues.
Yes.
The negative effects of unresolved past issues.
Mm-hmm.
See, these unresolved past issues are largely the function of the lack of comfort, the lack of love, the lack of reassurance that I may be getting in my early childhood.
Mm-hmm.
It, of course, can continue in other relationships, you know, as I grow older. But the negative effects of unresolved past issues clearly have a major role in terms of my ability or my movement toward the bliss point.
Right.
Toward true consciousness, a higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's me. I'm trying to reach the top of this mountain or this elevated, to use as a metaphor. I'm trying to get there. Now, I've got equipment. I've had the equipment. I've got the equipment, you know, that I need to journey to the top. But along the way, some of this equipment has been damaged. You know, some of it has been damaged.
Wow.
My yearning to be what? To be accepted. My yearning to belong. My desire to belong and be accepted and appreciated, which begins in the family, which begins with those parents.
Yes, sir.
And those siblings,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's been
dampened, or it's been thwarted. And early on in life, you see, when we're young, we simply haven't accumulated enough experience and enough wisdom to understand how to react. We don't really have enough to deal with. So when people treat us this way, when we are mistreated, when a parent, a guardian, or someone really says something to us that hurts, we're devastated. We say to ourselves, it hurts so much. We may not tell anyone, but it hurts real bad. It hurts. And we keep that. We keep
mm-hmm.
it inside of us. It's part of those unresolved past issues. That explosion, that argument that I had with mom or dad or my older brother, younger brother, older sister, younger brother, friend, best friend, whatever the case may be. And
mm-hmm.
these things haunt us. They haunt us. It's like a heavy weight we're carrying. We're trying to climb, you know, this hill. We're trying to that, but we got this weight. We got this pain. What Eric Toole called the pain body. We're carrying this sack of pain. We're carrying this sack of unresolved past issues. holding him with our arms, carrying it on the back, trying to make it up his heel.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we get out of breath and we stop and we hyperventilate and we look up and say, I wonder if I can make it. And we've been programmed to believe that we must continue carrying this bag of unresolved past issues. See? You see, my ego, I think I can't do without it. I think that I need these unresolved issues, all these emotional memories. You know, my ego says, don't forget this. Don't let it go. You know, it really hurts. And here I am carrying this knapsack or what have you, all these unresolved issues, and obviously you can picture that, you know, our audience can picture that. Each one of us has a knapsack or what have you of unresolved issues to one point or another. See, now sometimes it doesn't look like it doesn't come in the form of pain. Like I said, sometimes I actually use the phrase we're possessed. Possession means a kind of ownership.
Right.
We become our attachment and identification, see, like I said, with someone, with a belief, or organization, anything that can relieve that pain, we can kind of we'll become possessed. We're hypnotized.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make it up that hill until you start thinking for yourself. You can't make it up that incline until you can't reconnect until you can begin to recognize or be aware. Again, let's go back to awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I can't move up that incline until I become more aware of my true self, my real self.
Now, Dr. Brown, I'll give you a small pause. Let's put it into a real example.
Yeah,
I saw right last night, I saw this on TV. I want to use that as an example. All right, here you got this girl. All right, let me set up. This girl is 10 years old. Her father is an alcoholic and abused the wife terribly, abused the mother terribly, right in front of this 10-year-old. And after a while, this father actually kills himself. Now the mother is now blaming the daughter for the husband being shot, saying
his suicide, for him committing suicide.
Yeah, him committing suicide. Now blaming the daughter, says it's your fault that your father's not here anymore, and look what that's done to me now. What am I going to do? How can I survive? And the child is saying, what? And then she says, and you look like him too. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. So when a child looks in the mirror, the child starts hating the mirror.
Hating the mirror.
Yeah.
And possibly in the absence of some kind of counseling, not hating herself.
Yeah.
Hating herself.
Yeah.
You know, depression. You were talking about depression as we began the show.
Mm-hmm.
She probably is going to clearly develop features of depression, very low self-esteem, confusion, anxiety.
All that. So
yes.
how can someone like that, how can someone, you know, help her to really get in touch with a bliss point inside so she can be okay? Because if not, she might take herself out with drugs or who knows what
right.
later on in life.
Right.
You know?
The help comes in the form of someone in her life, something she may read, self-help books, or for that matter even reconnect it, your book. Something she may read or something. There has to be some intervention in her life where she's able to recognize that she cannot, in other words, she can recognize or be aware that she is not at fault. That's fundamental. That
okay.
she is not to blame and that she is not at fault. for the willful actions of another person. She cannot
right.
be blamed, nor is she at fault. And you remember either the last show or the show before last, I shared with you a saying that I repeat. In fact, it was the title of a book. I forgot the author's name. But I repeat it. I said it. I'm going to repeat it now, quote, unquote. Whatever you think of me is none of my business.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah.
Also,
I use it a lot.
In the process of being reconnected.
None of my business.
In the process of reconnecting, she learns that others' thoughts about her and accusations are none of her business. She's been programmed to believe that she is responsible for others' happiness and unhappiness.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's
like two things.
That's not true.
Responsible for her father's death and responsible for the mother's depression and unhappiness.
Definitely. Definitely.
You
and,
see?
Yes. Yes. And
for
that,
10-year-old.
Yeah, you see, and what is it, when people do that, we know that when they're blaming like that, you know, the mother in this case, displacing and blaming all of that, she's taking it out, as they say, on her daughter. But that is, we can just, what's important is how that girl feels, how she perceives, in other words, how she interprets what's happening, how she interprets what is happening, what happened regarding the relationship between her parents and herself, between her and her father, being able to recognize what are called thinking errors. They call them thinking. A thinking error is a thought or interpretation that I give to a situation that's not really correct. It's not correct. It's not true. But I may give that interpretation or that thought of the situation because I've been led to believe that that's what I should do. I've been taught this is the way I should feel, but it's in fact, let's use the phrase, it's a thinking error.
Thinking error.
I made a mistake in my interpretation of the situation. I made a mistake in what I feel about myself. Regarding what has occurred. And this occurs when we're very young. This often occurs when we're very young because if we receive negative messages from parents or people that we like and admire,
yes.
Many times we'll do what? We'll make a mistake regarding our thoughts and interpretation. You see, I may make the mistake of feeling that it's my fault.
Uh-huh.
I'm to blame. Or why am I so different from everybody else? Why can't I be successful? Why is it that I can't make the first team A, the squad A? Why is it that I can't? Why is it that it's repeated over and over again in one form or another? And you know, if I'm preoccupied or focus on the why is it that I can't.
Right.
Or the negative stuff, you know, the negative effect of unresolved past issues, I'm not going to be able to move higher. I'm not going to move higher in the sense of, like we use the example of this mountain.
Right.
It's higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Now the higher consciousness is actually true consciousness. It's the consciousness of myself, the true self. The true self is the awareness and consciousness that allows one to attain the bliss point. The bliss point is reconnection.
Okay, true consciousness.
True consciousness
yeah.
is the bliss point. And it is blissful. Because
oh,
if
yes.
it's sustained, you see, true consciousness, higher consciousness, connects you with everything in the universe, everything around you. you then, you know, like a radio receiver, we can say you're a receiver, you're picking up frequencies. You're
right.
Picking up frequencies that are now telling you what these frequencies are. They're signals, and when you interpret them, they're telling you that you belong. They're telling you you are part of something very great, that you are reconnected to everything in the universe. You are connected, you see, to all of life around you. You are connected to the power of life, the source of life. You're connected to the being, the happiness, the serenity of all that is around you. And that's when you start picking, when you pick up this signal. You see, this signal only comes, imagine that it's a radio dish. Many people have cable TV satellite dishes. But think of it as a satellite dish or something like this that one has to tweak and adjust. You see, it's a satellite dish that is adjusted and turned, you see, and once it is turned at a certain angle upward, it immediately starts connecting with these signals. And this is when the person experiences,
right.
This is the higher consciousness of the bliss point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, right there, Dr. Brown, another quick pause. We have Dr. Apple is joining our conversation. Dr. Apple, are you there?
Yes,
Dr. Apple,
I tell you, it's so good to hear Dr. Douglas Brown.
Hello, Dr. Applegate. How are you?
Oh, goodness.
Applegate.
Always good to hear you. I mean, I wanted to jump
me
and say something when I heard you talking about the hunger
Dr.
for the
Applegate,
burger.
I'm sorry. Yeah, okay.
Okay. Now, Zine, that made me want to jump in right there. You know what I mean?
All right.
But most important. I want to thank you for all the knowledge that you not only have shared with me through the years, but both you and Nazim, but for bringing out that very, very important concept of self-hatred, because I talk about that a lot with my students, because it's so important to understand what self-hatred really means, and it's an attitude of not believing in yourself. And I just love the way you brought out that the issue of hatred, hating the mirror. And then Dr. Brown said, yes, it's a hatred for yourself. And so I hope that all of the people out there listening to this great show this morning will understand how we can overcome those negative images that we get from our parents and from our environment, and find a better way of reconnecting with an optimistic attitude. So I just wanted to thank you again.
Thank you so much, Dr. Applewhite. Please accept my apology. See, that's my mirror neurons, my connectedness with you. See?
I love those mirror neurons.
Thanks
that's
so
right.
much for what you were saying. You know, if you don't mind, I just want to just comment on what you just shared, because it is very, very important. Self-hatred is, in fact, the consequence of what we were talking about. Self-hatred is not natural. Self-hatred is not something inborn.
Right.
Self-hatred is learned. It is a learned type of self-perception.
Mm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And tell me now, how do you actually learn to do that? Bring it home for us.
Learn to hate yourself?
Yes.
Self-hatred. Self-hatred is this point where I've reached this point of self-hatred. This occurs very slow process over time. It occurs as a function of repeated blame from others, repeated blame and accusation. Repeated dismissal. In other words, what I'm saying, I undergo repeated situations where I am blamed, I am accused of things, I am put down, I'm given negative verbal feedback. I am given the sense that when I am around others, it makes their lives uncomfortable. It makes their lives extremely difficult, or let's say very, very difficult. And of course, you see, that process will eventually, you see, lead to the to a place where I see myself as negative, unwanted. I see myself as a toxin.
Wow.
Toxin.
Wow, isn't that something?
Toxic.
Wow.
Toxic, you see, in relation to others.
Mm-hmm,
and I may even get, I may even begin to ask questions like, you know, why am I here? And
right.
Answers, and you know what the answer is if I start doing that and miss the self-hatred? Maybe I shouldn't be here.
Right, exactly, yes. Right.
Maybe the lives of others would be better off if I wasn't here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Things, you know, it seems that things don't work out. Things don't work out for me, and apparently they're not working out for other people either. Whenever I get involved or what have you, things turn sour, you know. So it's probably best or preferable in the extreme, it's probably best and preferable that, hey, you know, maybe I need to, quote, unquote, check out.
Right.
And, you know, that's when a person begins to, as you know, and Dr. Applewhite knows, this is when a person begins to have thoughts of committing suicide.
Right, right.
Or thoughts of engaging in, you know, it's what it's called self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
Inflicting harm on their own person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But,
yeah.
But as many, hopefully as much as we can, we want to do our part so that that type of thing doesn't occur. But one of the, I think it's very important by the same token to stress that short of physically abusing an individual, you know, of putting them in a clearly intolerable situation in terms of pain and negative feedback, ultimately, we cannot control the behavior of others.
Right.
And I don't say that I don't say that meaning we should be passive or non-involved, but I also said, with the understanding which you all have as well, that there are rare cases where an individual can, in fact, be given positive feedback, love, nurturance, reassurance, and they go down the wrong path. None of these concerns and none of the care from others can seemingly lift them from states of self-harm, where, you know, they're harming themselves, very cynical, or they may harm others. And that leads me, if I may, to I'd like to share this with the audience, and I hope
sure.
Dr. Applewhite is listening as well. Because
yes.
Because we are independent individuals, each one of us has a free will. Each one of us, you know, we have to drop the seed of awareness and plant it and cultivate it on our own. There's something that we must be aware of, that parents, you see, guardians and loved ones, and I mean those around us, they can basically only motivate and inspire us to do the best we can in life, to be ourselves. It's comparable to the, you know, consciousness and the bliss points. But they can't take us there. Our parents cannot guarantee, nor can they give us a map or prescription that will allow us to arrive at the bliss point, a true consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can also, while they cannot do that, they cannot directly do it, parents can also discourage and ill-equip a child to seek higher consciousness of the bliss point. And we've talked about some of the ways that parents and guardians, in fact, do discourage, and they ill-equip their children to reach that level of awareness by being negative,
mm-hmm.
disparaging.
Very good. very good point, Dr. Brown, because I really reinforce the fact that the attitude, the images that we get from our parents, the ones that are so responsible, our caregivers from the beginning of our life, in addition to our environment, has such an impact on how we see the world and how we see ourselves.
Right.
And I see it with many times with African American students, the non-white students, period.
Yeah.
This self-hatred issue going on with them. And on the student-teacher radio show, which precedes the show today, Nazim's show, we discuss some of the issues that are going on in today's world, but we try to bring it into how we can overcome it. We can overcome the emotional stress of it. And it leans so much on what both of you are saying this morning. So thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and I definitely appreciate and value your feedback. Can I get on my political box for a moment?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Yeah, I got to ask permission.
You can't resist that. You know you can't resist that.
I have to ask permission to get on that political box, right?
Okay,
I'll make it very brief. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen the government shut down, right?
Yeah.
And I've counseled people, as I said, you know, governments, institutions, what entities open and shut down all the time. But what's very important is that you don't shut down your mind.
Right.
That you don't shut that down.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because you may, something around you, in the world that's occurring around you, makes you discouraged or disappointed, or it may induce ill feelings. Do not shut that mind down.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that mind open. Keep it open and keep reconnected. Make sure that you understand that reconnection means that you know that the situations wax and wane. They open and close, but you're going to always keep your mind, yourself open. Go on.
I was going to say that we always want to speak in general terms because this is why we really don't do current events on Reconnect Show, because this show could be actually rebroadcast next year at the same time, and that won't apply. You know, so I always want to speak in generality, such as when governments do decide to shut down, and that could be any time.
Any time. Yes, I'm talking about any institution, government,
any
time.
So therefore, it won't seem like, oh, that was last year's program. That doesn't apply today.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. I think that we brought out today, we were talking about the government shutdown today and the issues of the politics that are involved. And those politics are going to continue to go on. And it's a thing of overcoming the issues within your own self and the way you look at your world. And I asked the listeners, and I'm going to ask your listeners to do the same thing, is to focus on at least two or more things that are positive in their world, not only in their life, their world, so that we can build.
That's so important, because too many times, like I say all the time on the show, we focus on what we don't want and wonder why we keep getting it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and we gotta turn that around. What would you like to see? What kind of government would you like to see? You know, how would you like to see your life? Focus on that. You know, focus on it. Focus on feeling good. And what happens is that you find that those problems, you know, have less and less effect on you, and you'll be dragged down. After a while, you know, you want to take a drink yourself. Just drive me to drinking.
You're right.
You know.
Yes.
So it has less of an effect on you. You see. Because those problems belong to somebody else. Keep telling yourself they belong to somebody else. They don't belong here.
Someone else. That's right.
they don't belong here. There's no welcome mat for depression in this house.
That's right. Sorry.
Follow me?
Sorry. No big D depression, Matt.
You know, there's no welcome mat for that. So we keep that. That includes negative people or anything that's going to take away life from us. You see? There's
no
welcome mat for it.
Can't steal my joy.
No. You can't do it. So therefore, it's important to keep that out front. And after a while, you find that less and less of those energies even come towards you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
You see? And that's so very important. So, by the way, we're going to put a little end on the show now. But, you know, there's so much to talk about, and that's why this is part three. I'm sure we'll have a part four now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to part four.
Yeah,
I want to introduce some more very recent as this week. I don't know if you all heard about the research that now has begun to uncover that there appears to be one of the major reasons for sleep is that the brain has something like a waste dumpster. And during sleep, there are different types of toxins, protein toxins that are removed from the brain. These toxins are accumulated as a function of our thoughts and feelings during the day. And I'm looking forward on the internet. Tell your audience, just go to the internet. All you have to do is put in the search engine, put in brain waste products, waste dumpster, sleep brain. Put in the word sleep, the word brain, you know, waste, and it'll come up. It'll come up.
Oh, okay. Tell you what, all I need from you is I always ask is, give me a very short paragraph on this, and that'll be part four. How about that?
Yeah. Mhm.
Okay. Good. And everybody heard that? Everybody's a witness, and so all you guys that when you get up tomorrow morning and you are here to reconnect the show in Singapore and Malaysia, you've heard that Dr. Brown will come on again with part four, talking about how basically brain waste products and what happens when we do sleep, you know?
And it's related to my awareness. It's related to, you know, my connectedness, and that's what I want to try to address and talk about, hopefully, when we reconvene.
All right, very good. Well, all right, well, everybody tune in to Reconnect the Show next week, as we always have some thought-provoking topics, and we want to make sure that everybody knows to go to the blogtalkradio.com/ Reconnected to hear the program anytime you want to. You can hear it many times. You can download it to your own hard drive, make your own CDs, ride around with the car with it, share it with friends, you know, have reconnected parties even. That's not a good concept, where reconnected parties. where, you know, instead of self getting drunk and wasting yourself and destroying your life, you actually.
I hear a party. I heard the party part.
You hear that part? We'll corrupt. All right, anyway. But the whole idea is that we got to turn fun around. The whole idea of fun, turn that around, turn a meaning around. So it means that we're actually getting better from the experience, you know? So that's so very important to understand that, you know? So that's what we want to do with the program. So everybody tune in anytime and hear the archive shows. Email me at the nrbookclub@gmail.com, or you can go on the site and there's a message board there. You can leave a message there too. So, Dr. Brown, thank you again, man. You've been so wonderful.
Thank you, Nazim. I really appreciate your energy here.
Dr. Denita Applewhite, Donita Applewhite has her White Apple Institute sponsored program called Student 2 Teacher Show, which comes on an hour before my show. And you can tune in to hear what she has to say and her guests and be primed for the Reconnected Show. How's that sound?
Right on. That sounds great.
All right. So, Dr. Apple, thanks for calling in. Dr. Brown, thank you again, too. And we'll close our little Latin theme. Everybody, come to next week. Thank you all. Thank you very much.